All right. Welcome, everybody, to Werewolf Radio for October 7th, 2020. I'm your host, Justin Deschamps from Stillness in the Storm, and I'm joined by my co-host, Neil Garr from Portal to Ascension. How's it going, Neil?
I'm doing good today, brother. How's everything with you?
Pretty good. Boy, we've had a heck of a couple weeks. I feel like every time we get on the show, I'm saying that.
Well, it's been a month since we did the last show, so yeah. 4 weeks, a lot of things have happened.
A lot of things that happened. So we'll get into all that today and talk a little bit about your event that just happened. So before we do that, I just got a couple announcements. We've got a really great guest today. His name's Mickey Huff from ProjectCensored.org. And it's really fitting because we've both dealt with a lot of censorship over the past month. And we're both going to have some personal stories to talk about that. And then we're going to get into some of what Mickey has to say, and he has a lot to say. I got a chance to do an interview with him recently, and he's a treasure trove of information. So just a few announcements for me personally, and then I'll turn it over to you, Neil, if you got anything. Mm-hmm. So Stillness in the Storm was deplatformed from our ad account. So Stillness in the Storm, for those of you who don't know, we fund ourselves from advertisements, or at least we did, and that kept the site basically free for readers so that you didn't have to pay anything to go on the site. Well, now that has come to an end because we don't have an ad platform that we're running through, at least not a major one. So most of the costs of Stillness in the Storm, which are pretty sizable, it's about $2,000 a month to run Stillness in the Storm, between servers and paying people and all sorts of stuff. Now it's all reader supported. So if you enjoy stillnessinthestorm.com, you like the news we're doing there, you like the work that we're doing there, please go to subscribestar.com/stillness-in-the-storm and sign up to be a subscriber. For as little as $5 a month, you can help keep Stillness in the Storm alive. And then one last announcement. I had a bunch of stuff happen this past couple weeks. The latest thing was I came home from a little traveling that I was doing and my house was flooded. So I had to delay releasing Into the Storm last night. So that episode is going to be premiering next week. And then I have a special mid-season break special that I'm going to be doing for everybody about some really cool stuff about the weaponization of intimacy and relationships. So that'll be coming soon. So
that's cool stuff.
Yeah, man. So do you have any announcements before we get going here?
Well, let me ask you first, is that going to be on Edge of Wonder, the weaponization thing, or where's that going to be?
Yeah, that's going to be on edgeofwonder.tv. So I'm going to have probably 3, maybe 4 episode special on all sorts of cool stuff. Intimacy, how the mass media weaponizes it to mess with our relationships, and how they use it to ruin our relationships, basically. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that should be really interesting.
That's awesome. At least. Yeah. So for me, as you know, and some of you listening, we just got done with the 5-day Portal to Ascension conference, ended the day before yesterday. Yesterday was the first day that I literally did I did one thing. I was going to say Portal to Ascension work. You know, I did a couple of things here and there, but it was really just chilling, taking some time off from it. The 5-day event was pretty epic. It actually exceeded my expectations on every level. We had 8,500 people register, and I actually was procrastinating putting the event together because just imagine this whole entire event. So for you who don't know, 5-day event, October 1st to October 5th, there was around 60 speakers and guests all together, and there was 4 panels. There were around 9 to 10 hours a day. So I actually procrastinated a lot putting it together because I put it all together myself, even the automation, making sure the speakers come in, all the follow-up. And so even by like me feeling like I took too long to put it out, we still had 8,500 people sign up in the 4 weeks that the event was up, which just showed like a lot of people were like really excited for it. And during the live event, the energy was high, man. Like literally the unity consciousness, the theme, the intention, and you were there in the beginning to do the intention with us. It really set the tone for the whole event. And everybody really was having a conversation based on unity. And it was a lot of empowerment, many testimonials afterwards. Some people said that like they've been re-enlivened, reinvigorated, you know. Other people have wrote in just how epic it was, and there's a lot of people just stayed there for the whole 5 days. So many people tuned in and out of the 8,500, but some of them were there the entire time just absorbing all this information. So the amount of like nonstop positive awareness on every level that went out and the way it was curated, like for example, Saturday and Sunday. Saturday we went into the UFOs and ETs towards the afternoon, but all day Sunday, bro, like it was hardcore experiencer. Like my mind exploded. If you just had Sunday as a standalone event and it ended with the UFO and consciousness panel. So not only did we have experience information, UFO stuff, but we ended with Nuts and Bolts meets consciousness panel at the end with like Adam Apollo, JJ Desiree Hertek, Grant Cameron, Kathleen Martin, who's the niece of Betty and Barney Hill. So it was really, really cool. So right. for you, those of you who did not get to take a look at it, you can go to the youtube.com/portal2ascension, sign up there. We're going to take it down and start relaunching it again every single day until the end of the year, ending on December 25th, where the content's going to circulate out there. My goal is to get hundreds of thousands of people to watch this information and just really just spend the rest of this year in the energy of not only awareness and information in regards to consciousness, but the positive aspects of it that unites us in this world that is so divided. So that's what the event was, guys. And I am so excited that we did it. And I'm really excited that it's over because now I can take some time and just relax for a bit.
Yeah,
so that's my major announcement. And just besides that, I have a couple other things I want to say. We do have some other events coming out. We have Trisha McCannon, Quest for the Holy Grail and the Grail Stone. That's going to come up on Sunday, December 6th. You can go to portal2ascension.org, online events, check it out. And then after that, Insights from Extra-Dimensional Beings, Ruben Langdon. He interviewed a lot of people that channel extra-dimensionals, including Bashar and other people, and it's all of his insights that he got and a consensus of his information, basically a statistical rundown of what the similarities are between all these people that claim to be channeling extraterrestrial and extra-dimensional beings. That's on October 10th. And then with Michael Sala, we have the China's Secret Space Program webinar on October 17th. And then we have a lot of events, but I'm just, you know, bouncing around here. We have Laura Eisenhower, Global Alchemy, Galactic Transmutation, and the Cosmic Realm, November 8th. So for the rest of the year, we're pretty solidly booked up until next year too. But if you want to check it out, go to portal2ascension.org and check out the events section.
Great. Beautiful. It seemed like it was very busy. Well, I'm really glad it was a hot event. Well, I mean, let's get right into it because there's a lot of censorship. So I know you and I both experienced the heavy hammer of censorship over the past month. I've just been getting it like all year, and then you had it really bad. So I'm just going to give a brief recap of what happened with me, and then we'll jump into what happened with you. So early this year in August, my email newsletter platform, MailChimp, they deplatformed me, gave me no reason whatsoever, just completely yanked it right after I paid them $150, mind you. So that's convenient for them. And so I had to find a new mail platform. Twitter censored me a few weeks before that. Again, no reason whatsoever given. And then recently, my ad platform that I used to pay, like I was saying earlier, they completely closed our account with no notice given at all. So that was the only way we were funding ourselves, basically, to make the site free. So that got yanked. And I had to scramble to basically figure out what I wanted to do. And I thought I was going to have to close Stillness, like, because I just don't, it's not like I make millions from Stillness, guys. I mean, I make just enough to basically pay my costs. And then, you know, I'm making my income from other sources. So yeah, that happened. And I thought I was gonna have to close Stillness. I put out a call to the audience and I said, hey, listen, if everybody wants to keep Stillness around, it's gonna have to be reader supported now. If you care, you're gonna have to, you know, pay with your dollars. And it doesn't have to be much. I mean, if you buy one cup of coffee a month, then you can buy us a cup of coffee, basically $5 a mm-hmm. month. And if even half the readers did that, we'd have all the funding we need. And that's basically what happened. So yeah. we're not totally, you know, we had a few angel investors that came in and gave us a big donation. So if we can get up to the subscriptions on Subscribestar, we'll be all set. We don't have to worry. So yeah, that's what happened to me. What happened to you? I think it was on Friday, right? That you got hit?
Yeah, it was on Friday. So like when one thing happens like that, you can chalk it up to algorithm maybe putting it into a conspiracy category, and maybe it's not intentional as much, but it's an algorithm based on the fake news, you know, attacks. Or you could say that maybe it was a different reason. When it happens, when multiple things happen to someone, then you start thinking like, wait a second, right? And that's what happened to you. It kept happening over a period of time. So you realize like, wait a second, there is a coordinated attack on this content, right? So for me, We went live on Portal to Ascension on Thursday, and we had a 10-hour day. And then on Friday, I'm halfway in the event, and then all of a sudden, I'm logged out of Facebook. And I was going live on like 20 different pages, not only on Facebook, but on YouTube. Actually, 18, there was 17 to 18 altogether. And so I try to log back in, and I can't log in, and it says account disabled. And so I start trying to look at my restream, and all the accounts that I was admin off, I've been pulled out of admin, and all the pages have been deleted. So I'm wondering what it is. And then I do a little, then Aaron and Tyler from Journey to Truth podcast email me saying, hey, we need the direct Zoom link for the webinar because our Facebooks have been taken down and our pages, both of their Facebook group and their page for Journey to Truth podcast deleted. I was streaming to both of them. And so then I was like, okay, wait a second. Is there any other content? Like, to look back at my content on my page, there is nothing that, like, there's a coordinated attack for sure on Facebook in regards to Q information. I don't really have any of that on my page, right? There is stuff in regards to some conspiracy stuff, but UFOs, all the stuff that I share, spiritual stuff, nothing. So there was nothing in, and I've never received a warning or a mark ever. I've never even received a fact checker. You know, really? So there wow. is no history information for me at all. Right. So, and then I started doing some research, and they're supposed to email you as soon as that happens as well to tell you what. I didn't get any email from them. And further research shows that they believe that I severely violated their policies. So severe violation is like putting up like a picture of someone that got killed or something. You know what I mean? Is putting up some pornographic, I can't even say the word, it's been so long. pornographic content, you know what I mean? And right. I'm like, what the fuck? Like severely freaking violated their stuff. What was I doing? And if you look at the first day of the event, I had people that were like John D'Souza, Laura Eisenhower, people that have been censored or would be the ones to be censored, right? But none of them talked about anything divisive. All they talked about was unity. So the only thing I could really think about is maybe we were focusing too much on unity on a platform that is intentionally designed to create division, because it was literally the intention. But check out this trippy part. 10 minutes before we got canceled, I was interviewing Billy Carson on our webinar about switching off my Facebook page. And not only switching off my Facebook page, but the detoxing of social media and what it does to us psychologically. That was the whole conversation. 10 minutes after that, I get shut down. So there was just too many synchronicities around it. And then the fact that I cannot review my account, meaning that there was something so severe that they don't even need to tell me why it happened, one. And then secondly, I'm not even allowed to request a review to ever open up my account again. The only way I can come onto Facebook is if I basically pretend to be someone else, or I change my phone number and then hope they don't end up figuring out who I am in the long run, because their algorithms, I tried opening up a new account before, the algorithms are so on point that they'll look at your pictures, your facial recognition, all types of stuff to see if you're the person that they banned before.
Right.
Yep. You know, so like, I'm pretty much like off it. And today I wanted to share, I saw a video on YouTube, I'm like, shit, this is cool, I gotta share with everyone. And I clicked the share button, and it was like, Facebook was not working. I was like, oh, it was the first day I tried to share something, so it's the first time I experienced the inability to utilize Facebook like I've been doing, right?
Right, right.
So I'm 50% happy, because I'm like, yes, I wanted to go off it anyway, you just like made it so much easier now. And then on the other level, I'm like, whoa, like they've censored me, and I wanted to take a break, but I don't even know if I take a break, if I'm actually doing them a favor, because they're the ones that didn't want me on there in the first place. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So yeah. it's hardcore right now. The bunch of people, other people actually got their pages and Facebook profiles deleted in the last 3 to 4 days. And if you look for it online, any information about that, there's no information, because it's like a underground like thing right now. They don't want publicity. They don't want the media knowing, but they want to keep taking these people off. At first, I never thought it would get to this point. I never thought it would get to this hardcore extreme point. If they're taking me out, right, and I'm not even really in under the classification of fake news, and I haven't gotten any warnings before, right, then I'm just, that just shows me that they are definitely doing a coordinated effort, and the world that they are trying to create with lack of privacy seems to be underway full throttle, and it's kind of worrying where that world could lead to, you know? Mm-hmm. So I don't know what to do or say at this point. I'm still pretty much in shock by it.
Yeah, I was pretty shocked too, because I mean, if I would figure if anybody's going to have their page censored, it would have been me. I mean, like I was saying, yeah. I've had a target on my back for years. My page got shadow banned back in 2018. You know, I was getting like 500,000-600,000 reach on my posts on Facebook. My page was growing like 2,000-3,000 likes a week. Mm-hmm. And then like a switch, everything just flatlined and I was like getting nothing. And so, yeah. And then I've been posting all sorts of stuff on my page, mm-hmm. stuff that is, you know, supposedly uncouth, verboten, and I don't get censored. So
yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make any sense. You know, it makes me wonder, I don't know exactly how, especially with Tyler and Aaron, you know, with Journey to Truth podcast, that, I mean, the UFO topic has been censored for a while, but for it to be just hammer censored just like that, it makes me very suspicious. Maybe they thought you were doing some type of big event and they were going to blow the whistle on something and they preemptively, you know, censored you. That's one of the things.
That could be because there are a lot of people in there that are hardcore whistleblowers that are on the forefront of all this information on my event. And the amount of publicity that for this event was hardcore. There was like graphics everywhere, people sharing Instagram stories. Like, I don't think, like, I've actually been a part of some of the biggest conscious online events ever. And the amount of actual feedback and people taking videos off the conference and then posting it on Instagram, on Facebook, it was viral. It was literally viral at that point. And it was so exciting because it was more viral than a live conference. Because we had people from everywhere. Like, if at a live conference, you're there, you're enjoying it, you do all types of stuff, you're in and out. But if you're coming to a 5-day online conference and you're there all the time, your dedication level's just been kicked up a notch. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, so those are the type of people there. So we had a lot of people sharing it. And I guess maybe there was too much content going around on the internet. I lost 200 streamers. As soon as they closed me down, 200 social media streamers vanished.
Wow.
You know? Mm-hmm. Oh, and then 10,000 people from my Facebook group, Portal to Ascension, not the fan page, but the group, it had around 25,000 people. It has 19,000 now. All the images I've ever shared to any Facebook group have completely gone because they were connected to my profile. So my own images on my own pages have gone.
No kidding. Yeah. They just completely wiped you. Yeah. I mean, it's obvious. And, you know, and this is a good place to talk about the reasons why. And psychologically, the reason why they do this, or even tactically, is because, you know, the censorship is important when you're trying to control an unconscious population. You know, and what happens is our world is filled with largely unconscious people, so much so that the social group mechanics are herd mechanics. It's for the way animals work. So how does an animal know whether or not another animal can be accepted into the herd or not? It's by guilt by association type of tactics, you know? And if we're all in a herd that is the white clothed herd or the orange clothed herd, you know, so we're all wearing orange clothes, you know, the guy who's not in the orange clothed herd because he's wearing green clothes. Mm-hmm. And it's the same basic concept. And so anything that counters that narrative, they have to get rid of and they have to scrub immediately. And the people who don't know how to think critically, they assume, well, if the big daddy of the herd, Facebook, Twitter, Google, mainstream media, if they say that you're verboten, if you're a bad guy, then you must be somebody that you shouldn't be associated with. And most unthinking people won't even question it any further.
Yep.
So,
it's insane, man. I'm not sure what's going to come out of it. I'm probably not going to get back on Facebook until January 1st, just if they accept me and allow me back into it. But I really wish we weren't on there now. I really do wish that I didn't need Facebook in order to continue doing my work. And that's what they do. They make it so that you're cornered into utilizing their stuff and you have no alternative. And then when you're without it, you're pretty much screwed, you know,
exactly.
just like someone who doesn't know how to use a smartphone right now, you're pretty much screwed in life. You know, if you want to do 90% of the things out there that can generate a good amount of income for you. Right.
Right. Yeah, that's it. Well, that's the thing. You know, we're social creatures too. So now you create a social media. In the beginning, it's all fun and happy, and you know, it's just for people and post stuff. Well, now you're applying for jobs there. You're potentially getting a job based on whether or not they can scrub your social media. All sorts of stuff are run through social media. Businesses, you buy, you know, products from social media. You interact with your friends and family in social media. Mm-hmm. So now it's become air. And if you don't have air, what's going to happen? You're going to suffocate. Yeah. So that's.
I mean, they have no regulation, little to no regulation, yet they are more influential than entire governments. entire governments combined, like the, you know, because they're all over the place. So just the fact that it doesn't have regulation that assists us because they're a private company doesn't make sense when you get to that influential point.
Exactly. Yep. Well, that's it. Yeah. And that's the reason why. Well,
so did you have some articles or something? We have Mickey in the room, but did you want to go over a couple things before we bring him up?
I had a couple, but I don't want to waste too much time because I know he's going to have a lot to say on this. So I'm just going to speak to one article real quick. We posted it today. It's called Proof That Tech Giants, Facebook, Twitter, and Google are using Chinese Marxist-style social media censorship on U.S. conservatives. So this was reported by Gateway Pundit. We shared it on Silence in the Storm. You can check that out on silenceinthestorm.com. And it was, the story came from Breitbart. So let me just go over some of this. It's so poignant for what's happening here. So basically what's happened is they're using a certain tactic to identify people that are considered hate agents. That's literally what has been reported. So in a document that was leaked to Breitbart News through somebody who worked in Facebook, it's called the Hate Agent Policy Review. And it outlines what is or called a series of signals that Facebook uses to determine if someone is outright ought to be categorized as a hate agent or not, and therefore banned from the platform. So you might be interested to hear some of this, Neil. So those signals include a wide range of on and off platform behavior. If you praise the wrong individual, if you interview them or appear at an event alongside them, Facebook may categorize you as a hate agent. Now, what's interesting is there's nothing too specified apparently in this document, but it also goes on to say that you could be, if you identify with a designated hateful ideology or hateful entity, then you could be labeled a hate agent. And it's on and off platform, and it's public and private. So what does that mean? Well, based on my own interpretation, I think this is what this means. Me and you, we're in a bar, we're having a conversation, we're talking about this or that people. What happens? We got our devices on us because we're hanging out. What happens? Our Facebook can hear our conversations and using an algorithm can assess and interpret our conversations to see if we're sympathetic to this or that person. If this is specifically targeting conservatives, so what is the biggest conservative group out there? Republicans. Who is the target of a lot of media smearing right now? Donald Trump. If me and you were having a conversation and I say, hey, you know, I really like Donald Trump because he did blah, 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 and I'm not aligning myself with the official narrative, well, now I could be labeled as a hate agent. And then just for you talking to me, you could be labeled a hate agent. And it's that simple. And then they could potentially pull your account. They could do all sorts of symbols.
So, yeah, that sounds like what, that's probably what happened. I interviewed a lot of these people, you know. This platform or not, so mm-hmm. But I also, like, because I'm not pro anyone, right, as you know, right, but right. When it comes to politics, but I am definitely not for Biden, you know. So like I blast him like crazy, and it could be a coordinated effort right now to stop the information that's anti-Biden because they're really trying to get him in office, you know.
I think that's what's happening. Yeah, as far mm-hmm. as I can tell, I mean, there's a lot of factors, but as far as I can tell, they did not want Trump to win in 2016. They were not as draconian as they are now, censoring people on social media, even though they were trying to manipulate social media, you know. So it's funny, there's a lot of, Facebook was raked over the coals for allegedly letting Russian agents come in and hack the election, right? Well, turns out that it was actually Google and a lot of these agencies, as far as I'm concerned, and based on my research, that were manipulating people's minds through social media. And mm-hmm. so these people accuse other people of doing of what they're guilty of doing. And, you know, now they're pulling out all the stops. They got every tool in their arsenal they're trying to use to make sure Trump doesn't win the election. And if he does, that they completely undermine any capacity he has to do anything. So makes you wonder, right? So,
yep.
All right. Well, with that, let's go ahead and bring our guest in. So we're going to go ahead and Mickey.
You have the host privileges, so you can add him.
Yeah, I'm going to bring him in right now. So I'm going to go ahead and intro him real quick. And so Mickey Huff is the founder of Project Censorship, or I'm sorry, contributor to Project Censorship. And I actually think he's a founder. And I had the pleasure of speaking with him on a panel that I did for Saturday Night Alive a few weeks ago, and then subsequently on a show with Scott Kalamatas And it was a really great show. We got to talk about censorship. We got to talk about a lot of different things that were really fascinating. He's highly knowledgeable. He has several books available. He has, it looks like, a documentary that's he's trying to get some fundraising for. So go ahead and check out his website, projectcensorship.org. Mickey, how's it going? Welcome to the show.
Hey, Mickey.
It's going well. How are you doing? Good to see you both, Neil, Justin. Thank you for the invitation. The organization's name is Project Censored. I'm wearing it on the shirt here.
Apologies. Yep. Project Censored. Yep.
I'm not the founder, but I am the third director. I've been director since 2010. To date, I have 12 books with Project Censored and Seven Stories Press, in addition to two others, one from City Lights, and including another textbook on media literacy, and doing another textbook on critical thinking right now for Rutledge. Because there seems to be a dearth or paucity of critical thinking that goes on in our culture and society. And so I was hearing you all talk. Sounds like you're riffing along the same lines there. Projectcensored.org is the website. So any of the stuff that we're going to talk about, your listeners, viewers can go there.
Wonderful. Thanks so much. Yeah, projectcensored.org, Mickey. Well, you know, you probably have just more thoughts on this subject than you can shake a stick at these days with all the stuff that's happening right now.
Yeah, I for real. And when you all were just talking right there, there were 100 places where I could have interjected hour-long lectures because the topics are huge and they're changing all the time. And I was especially heartened to hear the sort of really pointing the finger back at the big tech companies, because, you know, they're the ones that have really laid the plans and the foundations for all of this algorithmic chicanery and censorship, acting as if they aren't responsible for it, or they don't know what to do about it. Or my favorite is that they and the Democratic Party seem to love blaming Russia for all of their own internal shortcomings and inabilities to deal with or grapple, not just with social and political issues, but technological ones. So the Russiagate canard is something that just doesn't seem to want to die. And you know, between MSNBC and the Democratic Party and the New York Times and the Washington Post, they speak with almost a singular voice, as if this stuff is just taken, it's just already proven to them. Now, we do know that Russia meddled in the election, just like China and Israel and Turkey and a handful of other countries, because this is something that happens globally and has been happening forever. The United States actually has meddled in over 80 elections in other countries since World War II. So, we even meddled in the Russian election of Boris Yeltsin in 1995. If you want to look at Russian meddling, we were the ones doing it to them. So it's really especially troublesome to hear these canards repeated over and over with no one asking for evidence. And then when you ask for evidence, they say, well, 17 intelligence agencies said they had high confidence. First of all, intelligence agencies don't think, the people in them do. Second of all, the people in them disagree, which is why they don't always go public, and then they leak things for political purposes. Third, high confidence isn't evidence.
Right.
So, I mean, I'm laughing because it's on the logical face of it. If I had a student in one of my critical thinking classes make an argument about something like this, and that was their evidence, unnamed sources saying so, they would fail the assignment first and foremost, right? I mean, that's one of the main problems that would be happening. And secondly, I'd go back and ask them if they'd paid attention to anything that we'd learned that semester. But we're not talking about students in a classroom. We're talking about major corporate media figureheads. We're talking about major CEOs and tech people at billion-dollar companies. These people don't have excuses. They've got ulterior motives and hidden reasons. And to me, that's the more insidious and nefarious component of a lot of this online censorship. I did hear you talking about whistleblowers discussing the deplatforming of certain voices. I saw the Breitbart piece that Ann Coulter was flogging relentlessly. My main problem with those arguments is that those are the same places that regularly deplatform and call for censorship of anybody they disagree with. So I don't really, I don't think they have an ounce of integrity to be crying about being deplatformed, because they're the first people to be crowing about who they think should be deplatformed and censored. So I see censorship as a right-left problem. Right? The whole binary paradigm lacks depth and holistic understanding, which you know all too well in the work that you do and the kind of things, the way that you think and see the world and express yourself with people. So I don't think that's shocking to you. But I also don't dismiss what the whistleblowers are saying. And I don't just dismiss something coming from Breitbart because it's Breitbart. I just think that they all seem to have other ulterior motives.
Yeah, of course.
For example, the Foundation for Individual Rights in Education is a nonpartisan, nonprofit supporter of academic freedom, period. They protect people on the left, in the center, on the right, all around. And to me, that, and by the way, they also get guff from every side. Curiously, they're funded by the Koch brothers, and they work with Real Clear Education and some other right-wing foundations. But I know many people at the FIRE, including the CEO. I've worked with them before. I've published them in our books. I just had them on two radio shows in the last month. And all the people I know there that run the ideological gamut, the one thing they agree upon is censorship. They're not in favor of it, mm-hmm. Period. End of story. And I think that we lose sight of that because of our confirmation bias flaws as humans. And we really quickly kind of get into tribes and camps. And if you were mentioning, I heard you talking about hate speech and the whole guilt by association fallacy. Mm-hmm. Like if you guys are at a bar talking and your device hears you, this is just so preposterous. It's as if we didn't even go through a period of enlightenment 400 years ago in the West. Right. And I granted other parts of the world have gone through different periods of enlightenment, but I'm kind of looking at this period as a really strange and contradictory one, because there are a lot of enlightening things happening and there are paradigm shifts before us. Yeah. But I think a lot of folks aren't tuned in enough to see them. And there's what I've seen to be is kind of a regression. In the last couple decades in the United States in particular, I've seen a real regression in terms of civic engagement. I'm not saying people aren't involved in doing things and that there aren't protests. I'm talking about culturally. The tolerance for difference and the tolerance for working for change seems to have just evaporated. And I think that the social media landscape has helped suck all the air out of that room, right? And it basically has just filled it with noxious fumes, flammable ones, and just lit a match and run off to the bank. For lack of a better, kind of visual. I think the tech companies have been recklessly irresponsible. As you mentioned earlier, I believe, Neil, you were saying that it's unregulated. It's like Wild West, willy-nilly, almost anything goes, except for what they say doesn't, mm-hmm. right? And right. So it's that private sector for-profit censorship that we're seeing as a really serious problem right now. And again, I know that it's happened. I covered this 2 years ago. There was a mass purge of Twitter and Facebook that began as a trial balloon with Alex Jones of InfoWars. Mm. But then once that trial balloon went up and a bunch of liberals went, yay, we don't like him. He's terrible. He's fake news. Mm. Broken clocks are right twice a day. There's plenty of stuff that I've seen, that has happened at InfoWars that has been pretty reliable over the years. There's also a lot of noise and propaganda, but I dissect all media systems that way. So including the New York Times, for example. So for me to see them put up a trial balloon that nobody cared that this whack job, as they call him openly, right? They don't even pretend to hide their disdain for this stuff. And look, I don't agree with a lot of the things that Jones has said, but that's not what this is about. Once they deplatformed him, they went across the spectrum and they went after a bunch of groups on the left, right? Anti-capitalist sites, Mint Press News, Counterpunch, Dave Lindorf, people that I know and work with. And on the other end of the spectrum, they went after a bunch of libertarian groups, right? So basically, anybody that's not in favor of the neoliberal, new order, right, or global governments and so forth. And I'm not getting into the weeds here. I'm not talking about, the Rothschilds and Illuminati. I'm talking about the global banks that we already know do all of this stuff. Yeah, I'm talking about the BlackRock investment firms. I'm talking about the G8. you don't need to dream up outlandish theories for who's running the world. Peter Phillips wrote a whole book on it called Giants, the Global Power Elite, where he names a 300 and some people by name, where they work, how they do it, what their networks are. You know, this is a matter of political sociology. You know, it's not like the stuff of fiction. But I think that what we need to be careful of there is just recentering ourselves on the fact that we can't really support censorship of any kind. And I do see this on the left. I do see the social justice warrior person that you can't have this argument. I mean, you can't even have a Marxist critique of Black Lives Matter without being racist somehow, you know, which is an amazing thing. The Democratic Socialists of America, pushed Adolf Reed Jr., an African-American Marxist scholar of extraordinary reputation, was criticizing critical race theory for not focusing enough on capitalism or racial capitalism as a theory for analysis of oppression. And basically they were not going to invite him to speak. And then as part of the cancel culture, they said, well, you can't come speak unless you debate and we challenge what you're saying. Now, look, I think that's a great idea too. I think that's a better way to handle these things. However, asking somebody to come and then changing the platform at the last minute before they show up isn't exactly a cool thing to do. It's not professional courtesy or etiquette, right? And so basically what happened is they got complaints that he wasn't on board, right? In other words, he didn't pass every litmus test. And you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Of course.
If you don't pass all the litmus tests, you're somehow out of the group, right? And that kind of groupthink has no place in a free society. And that's another reason why we don't support censorship. And I certainly don't support, quote, hate speech. But I'm also careful about throwing words like that around because they're so subject to interpretation that we have to be careful that we're not throwing entire babies out with bathwater.
Oh, right? Yeah.
How do you know what something is going to, what somebody says unless they actually are saying it? And then arguing it in context to let people debate and understand it, right? Yeah, so I think that when we censor any groups, I think that we're really on a slippery slope and we're really not heading toward a more enlightened culture.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, if we're censoring, it's based on the predicate that there are arbiters of truth, there are pillars of society that know how to run society. You don't, you're too stupid, your voice doesn't matter, and you need other people to tell you what is real. And you know, in my estimation of how a society evolves, it needs to be the free proliferation of information. Because if we want to actually have sovereign individuals who can think critically, can make good decisions, and can form viable communities, information that is uncouth or verboten needs to be shared and discussed and debated. Yeah. You know,
I couldn't agree more. But I have to say that, and you're likely aware of this, that's not exactly a popular opinion. It seems popular at the time when you're speaking to a person that they like what you're saying, but then when you turn around and defend somebody else's right to teach something differently or to publish, print, say, or argue something differently, you know, you're calling the thought police. We don't need thought police. We don't need algorithmic censoring. We don't need human censoring. We don't need all these so-called fact checkers. You know, I teach critical thinking and critical media literacy. I teach people how to check facts on their own. I don't need somebody at the Atlantic Council, which is a PR wing of NATO, telling me what is or is not legitimate news, right? And they're one of the fact checkers at Facebook. So, you know, and there's a whole plethora of others, and we've written about this at length in our publications. But back to Russia, I don't need Facebook to warn me that this story may have been coming from Russian bots. If you take a look at a lot of the claims about Russia and Russian meddling and the stories that they allegedly planted, many of the stories were not false at all. They just ran completely counter to establishment corporate bipartisan thinking, if that term is applicable in that context. So anybody that challenges the two-party corporate state must be getting propaganda from Russia. I mean, that's laughably absurd. Were some messages coming from Russia demonstrably false? Yes, comically so even at that. But let's also go back to Russiagate and look at the real sheer numbers here that we're actually talking about. You know, the Internet Research Agency, which was one of the big alleged propaganda hotbeds coming out of Russia, you know, in this period that we were dealing with coming up on the election, between 2015 and 17, that two-year window around the last election, Facebook logged 33 trillion posts. 33 trillion with a T. Wow. The Internet Research Agency generated 80,000 of those.
Wow.
Yeah. Anybody want to
drop in a bucket?
Ready? 0.00000000024% of total Facebook content time for 2 years was from the IRA in Russia, which is allegedly the mastermind ground zero headquarters of Russian disinformation somehow got Trump elected. He wasn't elected. He was electored by the college, and he lost by 3 million votes. So which country here is having a problem with democratic theory? Yeah. Look, Russia is riddled with oligarchs. It's riddled with censorship and its own problems. But I'm not a critic of Russian media, because that's not what I do as a scholar. I'm a critic of the corporate press in the U.S. because I'm an American historian, and I work in the U.S., and that's my academic focus. So when people want to play whataboutism and talk about Putin as the strong man and Putin as a thug and Putin doesn't like free speech and Putin is against the gays, I'm like, oh, yeah. And what's that have to do with what we're doing here? We're the ones that can't seem to maintain our own ship. We're the ones that are rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic as we sink. We're the ones that aren't rising to the occasion to support our own civic systems. We don't need help from Russia to screw things up. We've done fine all on our own.
Straight up. You know, I remember when Trump just became president and they showed a picture of Putin with his shirt off at on a horse, right? And the same media that was hating on Putin decided to say that Putin was a greater leader of the country and he's so much more fit. They did this whole entire piece on Putin and how great of a person he was compared to Trump just because he had his shirt off on a horse. Or I think it was on a horse or on a boat, one of those.
Yeah.
And but those same exact people were just talking crap on him and trying to say that like that person is doing all these malicious things. So what does health and looking good on a horse have to do with that, right? It's just—
Yeah, well, look, you're peddling in sheer propaganda, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, there's not even a substantive news story in the midst of any of that nonsense. And then, of course, it becomes an internet meme with Putin riding a horse, right? Or it's Putin on a Ritz and he's riding a Ritz cracker. Rachel Maddow, who by the way, has a PhD in political science. Uh-huh. That shows how well-programmed people can be the higher up that ladder they go if they don't ever decide to think on their own. You know, she makes a couple million bucks a year to peddle this Russia-phobia nonsense. Yeah. She's turned it into a cottage industry. But by the way, in my line of work, whenever I criticize left or liberal media, especially if it's a woman, that's immediately you're sexist. Because the whole identity politic game has kind of taken over like any kind of substantive argumentation. And it's like, no, I didn't vote for Hillary Clinton, not because I don't think a woman should be president. I didn't think she should be president because I didn't agree with her policies.
Yeah.
I mean, were there people that are misogynistic and running campaigns against her, being very negatively casting negative stereotypes about women? Yes, there were. Should we call those out because they are a highly less evolved kind of thinking? If it's really thinking at all. Absolutely. But because somebody else has a different critique, they shouldn't get back to your guilt by association conversation. We got lumped into all kinds of associations with groups of people simply because we were saying, well, we don't think that that's the best candidate. Likewise now, you might say like, well, I don't think Joe Biden is the best candidate. Well, so am I ageist? Those kind of arguments are complete bunk, and they easily distract us, just like Putin on a horse, right? They just as easily distract us and get us talking about things other than policy and other than how government actually works and who it works for, and then thus, of course, who it doesn't work for at all, right? Notice how we're not having that conversation at all.
Well, that's the whole point, is that if you're running a democratic republic, which we're ostensibly supposed to be in some fashion, then your vote should be an informed vote. Your decision should be informed.
garbage in, garbage out, right?
Exactly. And if you're not, and you know, this is something I've spoken about for years, and I think should be on the debate table as far as how do we run a good country. Should your vote be qualified? If the reason you're voting for somebody is because they are black or they're a woman, or you know, they happen to eat the type of hot dogs that you like, is that a good basis for them potentially running an election where the decision has to be, should they build a good bridge or not?
Yeah,
this is a strange discussion in terms of culturally, because I, as an historian and a social scientist, I'm acutely aware of the history of oppression in this country. And I've been teaching this stuff for 20 years. I didn't need somebody at Black Lives Matter to come and check out my curriculum to be teaching people about the absolute horrors of slavery and Jim Crow and de facto dog whistling racist policies through the 21st century. I was doing that already. I'm not saying Black Lives Matter shouldn't be a movement to elevate discourse and get people thinking in ways that maybe they haven't before.
Sure.
As a movement, as a civil rights movement. But whenever you start getting into litmus testing and preaching and pretending people don't understand, don't accept that you understand the issue, even if you put it differently, unless you put all the blocks lined up, you're just the other. You're automatically kicked into the other camp somehow. And so not only have we lost the art of disagreeing with one another, we can't even agree with each other. Yes. We look for one splinter of a reason. We can hang here and talk and nod our heads and hang out and have a beer and do whatever and get along forever. But then as soon as I hear one trigger or one thing that you say that catches me off guard, I'm just going to come down on you like a ton of bricks. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to pretend that shades your whole character. Well, that kind of halo effect, or that kind of if you extrapolate that individually to society, it's like groupthink and ostracism.
Oh my God! Right? Yeah, right,
and
yeah.
Again, that just has no place in a free society, and it has no place in the critical thought process. But yet, this is exactly the virus. Talk about viral kinds of problems, whether they're COVID or social media or bots or algorithms, propaganda and disinformation itself is a kind of virus. You know, as Jonathan Swift wrote in 1710, falsehood flies and truth comes limping after it. Well, nowadays with the internet, as you all were saying before, a lie gets halfway around the world before the truth gets its pants on. I never know why the truth has its pants off, but maybe that's because it has nothing to hide. But nevertheless, you know, we have that problem now on steroids.
Yeah.
What's the antidote for it?
If critical we love
thinking, right? Critical
right,
thinking.
Right.
What yeah. did you say?
I was saying, like, if, as a people, I feel like humans love drama. And in the truth, a lot of times, there's not as much drama. So when the truth goes, when the fake information goes around the world, people hold on to that. When the truth comes, more people are, even though more people are going to deny it, especially nowadays, because, you know, you asked someone 30 years ago, right before Bush, maybe 20 years ago, so what do you trust your government? You might have got 50% or more. Now you ask them, you chances are you might get 0% or like 10%, you know? So it's just that people now have inherent lack of faith in their leaders, which is a great thing because they have not had our best interest in mind. But the division is also being curated by these organizations, these governments, where they get truth and then they combine it with a bunch of fake stuff. But then the core underlying reality has some truth to it, so they can still play with it, you know? Like the Russia thing, for example, Russia definitely had an involvement, but they just put all this bullshit on there, you know? And part of that started with John Podesta saying something about Russia that had just, he just randomly said it. It had nothing to do, I forget what it was, it's been too long now. But
it was he and Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
Right? And you know, they, of course, had a vendetta against Julian Assange and WikiLeaks.
Mm-hmm.
So they literally concocted the Russian egg, right? They literally kind of concocted what became Russiagate right there.
Yeah.
You know, people say that Trump is the one that started the whole fake news stuff and, you know, that's not true. Trump certainly took the fake news meme, weaponized it, and used it against people. And there's no doubt about it. And he's great at it, right? Because these people in these institutions that should know better take the bait almost every time, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But if you go back, the whole problem with this business of blaming Russia was scapegoating over the fact that Clinton won the election but lost anyway. Mm-hmm. And so there had to be a reason for it, right? Yeah. Well, instead of looking at her tepid neoliberal policies that have screwed the working class into the ground for the last 30 years since her husband was in office, and if you take a look at, you know, a whole raft of other kind of legislations that she supported and the banks that she supports, and how about divisive comments? People talk about Donald Trump being a divisive person, and he is. When Hillary Clinton refers to people as deplorable, I mean, how are you not playing the same game? Right. When Joe Biden was at that shouting fest with Donald Trump a couple weeks ago, and Trump was very obviously, you know, not able to handle the situation, instead of Biden really kind of just saying, hey, the moderator needs to get you in check over here, the moderator needs to hold this together, who's from Fox News, by the way. But instead, Joe Biden took the bait too. And Joe Biden said, you're a clown. And nobody likes you anyway.
This guy.
Right.
Yeah. And it's like, you know what, man? You're proving to everybody now that they shouldn't be voting for Republicans and Democrats. And they surely likely shouldn't be voting for either of these characters, because they're more interested in trading one-liners than they are about talking about record levels of unemployment. You know, a pandemic that's spiraling God knows where or how or for what reason, right? And they don't even seem to be curiously interested in getting to the root of it or the bottom of it, right? Like even how it started out in the first place. So when you talk about a lack of faith in government and civil institutions in society, you're right. It's at record lows. But you know what? We've been driving there for 50 years. And this is the book I wrote about that with Nolan Higdon, called United States of Distraction, Media Manipulation in Post-Truth America, and What We Can Do About It. We spend the first half of the book writing about the history of the last 50 years. How did we get here, right? The book starts out with a Lao Tzu quote, if you do not change direction, you may end up where you are heading. Mm-hmm. Are we there yet?
That's cool.
This is where we've been heading, people. This didn't just happen. This isn't just Trump. It's ever comical that everyone's like, my God, 2016 hit and everything went to hell in a handbasket. I'm just like, what basket have you been in?
Yeah.
Like, talk about baskets of deplorables, man. It's like, we wrote books for 8 years criticizing the Obama administration. And before that, the Bush administration. And now the Trump administration. I'm like, does anybody see a pattern here?
Dude.
Does anybody see the duopoly of the two-party corporate state? And how they use these distractions and these titillating sensationalist half-truths to keep us paying attention to anything other than the man behind the curtain. And Eddie Bernays talked about this 100 years ago. He said the people that are pulling the wires of the public mind are people you've never heard of. And that's how they do it, through PR agencies, advertising, now on the internet, through algorithms, you know, feeding our confirmation biases, hiding certain posts, secretly deplatforming, censoring, and shadow banning certain groups and organizations, right? I mean, this is I hate to say it, but this is the logical outgrowth of where we've been heading for some time. So for people to kind of like all of a sudden, I mean, I'm always happy when people kind of wake up to something, because I think we're always at different levels and we're all waking up to different things at different times in our lives.
Sure.
Especially if we're open to it. So I try not to, I don't like being judgmental per se about, well, you just woke up to that the other day. Isn't that better than not waking up at all? But the notion that somehow this wokeness turns into its own cudgel to bludgeon others with and rank people on who's more woke than someone else, that's just another distraction. That turns the whole thing into some playground game instead of some actual spiritual growth.
Yes. That's why we don't progress. You know, that's the lack of progress. You just outlined it right there. And in the last 20 to 30 years, you could say forever, really, but it's really been hardcore. That's why we aren't even able to progress technologically because of the way the system is set up. You know, everybody's trying to milk every product line. I feel like the governments in general, but definitely the U.S. government, is one of the biggest gaslighters on the planet. You know, like the censorship is the censorship goes so deep that they've figured out a way to make us feel
back to the beginning.
Right. They make us try to make us feel that we're not, like, they've figured out a way to show us that we're not censored when we're really more censored than most people on the planet.
That's the genius of it. You go back and read the great propaganda theorists like Jacques Ellul, and later Nancy Snow, and Janet O'Donnell, Jonathan O'Donnell, who wrote the great primer on propaganda and persuasion. These people will tell you, they're just straight up. They're like, this has been going on forever. And the more clever the messenger is, the more successful the propaganda campaigns, the degree to which the targeted audience is unaware that they are a target at all. And this is what Noam Chomsky called necessary illusions, stemming back from Bernays' manufacturing consent, that you can steer people into certain directions and have it appear as though they're making logical decisions on what they've been given. But meanwhile, everything else has just been shoved totally out of the matrix. So you're not allowed to see it at all. So that when people like us show up and start talking about things that aren't in the myopic bubble of legitimate controversy, we're crazy. We're conspiracy theorists. We're lunatics. But, you know, that is what we need to address is that, look, once you actually figure out what I'm arguing and saying, then you're free to label me how you like. But knee-jerk reactionary behavior to something different and new simply because it's unfamiliar is just utterly authoritarian, right? And in a society like this, that kind of authoritarian masquerades as freedom every single day.
Yes.
From the upper levels of society right down to the quisling that's ratting people out for not following whatever the CDC changed its mind to say yesterday. Mm-hmm. Right? Well, it's that kind of authoritarian thought that is at the core of our culture and at the rot of any republic. No republic can withstand that kind of authoritarian thought and behavior. And we were founded upon it.
Well, and that's just a problem that we've been dealing with.
Stories of all time is literally the United States of America. The Declaration of Independence is a document of propaganda. It's completely written. And look, the best propaganda is partially true, right? But those documents were used to get other people to push off the Britons because only 10% of the merchant class was interested in separating because it was financial as much as it was ideological. And so they had to convince more people to join the cause. And the only way they could do it wasn't that you'll be rich like us, because that was a lie. It was you'll have a chance to own your property and do your thing.
the pursuit of happiness.
That's right. That's
the pursuit of happiness, as you know, going all the way back where Jefferson ripped it off from Locke, means private property and rights through property. And if you don't own property, you are property. Right? And so that's somehow the enlightened thought behind the Declaration. Man, like if we can't get outside of that mental slavery, we really have nowhere to look.
Well, this just goes to show you, and I'm sure you'll agree, Mickey, that if you look at every society throughout history, at least the ones that I've looked at, and I can't say I've looked at them all, but there's one pretty common thread, which is that you have an elite, you have an aristocracy, whether they're plutocrats, oligarchs, you know, bourgeoisies, whatever name you want to call them, and they need to actually maintain society for their own benefit, because ultimately there's this form of parasitism at work, right? So how do you get the host to willingly accept the parasite? Well, you have to make them think that they're free. And now, you know, I think it's pretty unequivocal that we're all agreeing on this point. So this is where I'm going to want to turn the conversation to a kind of positive end as we come to a close here.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Because there's plenty of things that we can do about all of this.
Oh, absolutely. So my thing looking out is this. If we're doomed as a species to forever and on for eternity have to deal with this problem, you know, then you would think that we're screwed and there's nothing we can do about it. But I would actually argue the contrary. I think the big thing that we're dealing with here is not that we forever have to deal with an elite and an enslaved. The big problem is that the power has always been with the people in potential, but it needs to be developed and curated. And me as a psychologist, I look at it like this. We are animals, but we're also spiritual creatures. We have an animal body and we have the potential for an enlightened mind, but it has to be cultivated.
and nurtured.
And so how do you, as society, if I'm an enlightened person, let's just say, for, you know, I'm not, but let's just say I'm enlightened and I want to help other people become enlightened. How do I do that? Well, I have to teach people how to become enlightened. I have to try to strengthen their critical thinking skills. And so every society, even the most well-intentioned people throughout history, have had to contend with a strategic problem. Mm-hmm. How do you get the herd to stop being a herd and actually start being wolves and think for themselves? You know, so
there's a lot of power and empowerment and liberation when you become aware that you do not really own your own mind. And I think that mm-hmm. we all have those epiphanies and light bulb moments, right? Where something happens in our lives where the switch goes on. And the interesting thing about the switch is that we can shut it off if we're dishonest with ourselves. And many of us shut it off, or at least have a dial where we can turn it up and down like a dimmer switch, quite literally.
Right.
But for me, when the knob was up and the switch was on, I left it there because it meant that I was trying to, I was aware of the fact that there were so many things I could never know and that I wouldn't know, that if I didn't leave it on, I would miss opportunities to get closer to that unattainable goal. I wouldn't grow as a person. I wouldn't experience pleasure or pain. I wouldn't experience what it means to be a human being. I wouldn't be able to develop my own spiritual awareness, whatever that means, if I even have any. But I mean, I essentially would be a prisoner to my own closed mind. Right. And this is when the mind can be easily controlled. And ironically, some of the very people in our society that are the most educated are also the most programmed, where they mistake the illusion of education for wisdom or knowledge, right? And that's a real common conflation that people hide behind because it means that they were always able to keep the dimmer switch halfway up. They never had to go full bore. And anytime you do, all of a sudden, a lot of the social conventions, you know, a lot of things that we're, as a psychologist, a lot of the things that we're kind of trained even unconsciously to do to get about our day, right?
Yeah.
Every single one of those things becomes a challenge. Every single one of those things is fair game to reconsider, to really think about. And so that, if you think about what's happening from that perspective, what could be more empowering than finding yourself in the driver's seat of your own life? Now, you may not be necessarily making all the roads yet, and you certainly can be swayed and driven off paths and so on. But it's always different when I'm not going, quote, along for the ride. And if I'm not seeing what I want to see and what I need to see in terms of factual information on one highway, I can steer and get off and look somewhere else, right? And you guys were talking about Breitbart before. I mean, you know, I'm not a terrible fan of Breitbart. Mm-hmm. But look, I read Breitbart just like I read 100 other sites every day across the spectrum because I want to know what they're thinking. I want to know what the rationale is. I want to know what caused them to report about X and Y, where over here, X and Y either don't exist or are being told they're very different. But see, that means that I get to choose, I get to think independently, and I'm the one that is kind of getting closer to calling the shots in my own life that I can actually control. Because as we all know, there are so many things in life that we have no control of at all, right? And so part of being more enlightened is coming to some grips with that, which is why I accept what facts tell me. They're the things that can help me understand what's happening around me better. And I'm still going to perceive them in my own way, according to my own values and my own conditioning, which I also have to check, right? I also have to constantly re-examine. But that's the best path we have in order to be, you know, critical independent thinkers. You know, Emma Goldman, the anarchist feminist, once said about 100 years ago, she said the most unpardonable sin in society is independence of thought. So we notice that so many people in society that are scapegoated or ostracized, it's not necessarily that they're being kicked aside because of what they're thinking. It's because they dared to do it. And that's the real sin, right? Now, look, we'll hang on an argument. We'll hang, he's an anti-masker, or they're anti-vaxxers. They're not safe for society. Let's really boil this down. It's not about masks, and it's not about vaccines, and it's not about COVID, and it's not about Russia, and it's not about whatever you wanted to say it's about. Do you support the right of critical independent thinking? Do you support academic freedom? And do you support free speech and expression? It's a complicated topic, but it's a simple answer, right? You either support it or you don't, I'm afraid to say. Yeah. Well, no, this over, nope. What are the arguments? How do I know the person that's arguing X is a lunatic or a crackpot or a conspiracy theorist if you won't let me hear them?
Yeah, that's right.
If you won't let me read the arguments and look at the evidence, right? Yeah. So this is, again, why critical thinking is a really powerful tool, which is why we don't teach it very much in our curriculum. The whole corporate private teaching movement moving over to the tests and moving away from John Dewey's type of classroom as a social laboratory to resolve cultural and societal and political problems. Nope. There's no time for critical thinking. Even in civics classes, students are bored stiff because instead of talking about issues like we're talking about, they're still memorizing the branches of government, right? Rather than like actually figuring out if they do anything at all for us or anything that they're supposed to do according to their own documents. So we have prescriptions for people. We try to teach people how to think more critically and independently, not what to think. That's just completely antithetical to the process. And we have a list of several things that we think people should do in the back of our book, United States, A Distraction. We need real civics education. We need real critical thinking that we've been talking about that goes on a pedagogical level across the curriculum. We need to be critically aware of media and information platforms and sources, where they come from, who funds them, what their views are, just so we can understand why does this person want me to agree or disagree with something? What's the motivation and intent? We need community engagement and cultural competency. We need to be out there in the real world, not on these screens, but with each other in community, right? That's why all this social distancing, I mean, let's listen to the language of that. Social distancing. Mm-hmm. Aren't we really talking about physical distancing?
Exactly.
Ah, yeah. But social distancing is a little bit more honest, isn't it? It's to de-socialize and create a more antisocial climate, which is more easily controlled by fear and paranoia and distraction, right? And so, but look, say that out loud and you'll get enemies real quick. We need to transform the way we stay informed. We need to broaden our news media entirely. We need to broaden our sources. We need more local investigative journalism from the grassroots level. We need to have mass infusion of public support for media and education, take it out of the hands of the private corporate sector that has only profit in mind. If we're going to have civic public sphere institutions, we need to pry all of these other interests out of them. And they literally need to be of, by, and for the people. Justin, Neil, if we're going to have a republic, shouldn't we try to have one? Shouldn't we make the effort, the day-to-day maintenance that self-government requires? No. We outsource it to everybody and push a button and click it and then pull a lever or vote by mail and we go about our merry lives. You know, right. This is all part of the illusion that people live in, that they believe that they're free. But unless your mind is free, you're not free at all. And this is what we try to get across to people in our work, is that we want more people to think critically. I want people to disagree with me because I want to learn, right? I want to learn why somebody else has a different view on something. And what can I learn about it? And how can I contribute? How do we collectively grow that consciousness if we're not able to have those conversations? So I appreciate the opportunity to come on with you fellows today because I think that that's what you're interested in overall. Mm-hmm. So certainly. I appreciate the invitation.
Well, Mickey, thanks so much. I really appreciate it. And, you know, I just echo everything you just said. I think if we're going to have a truly free world, we have to deal with the consequences of freedom, which is you're going to get disagreement. And
it's complicated, man. It's hard work.
Yeah, and it's beautiful that way because, you know, what the hell do I know? My perspective is limited. You know, if I didn't have people like you or my, you know, other fellows that I was working with or other people on the street, I wouldn't know what I anything else that's out there. So, Mickey,
Much as I'm an individual, I'm a collective project. You know, I soak up everything that is around me. I try to make sense of it, and sometimes I even try to let other people help me make sense of it, even if I go back and disagree with it later. You know, I try to go the extra mile in that some other person's shoes and figure out, you know, what, again, we spend a lot of time just waiting for you know, to be our turn to say something. Yet we don't spend much time at all processing what someone else is trying to tell us.
Bingo. Yep.
And that doesn't mean we have to agree. It just means that I think when you're talking about critical thinking and writing and speaking, you're also talking about critical listening, or else the others are going to fall flat, mm-hmm. In my view. And so, like you, I'm very grateful to work with so many people that I have in my life and met in my life from all different walks that I've learned so much from. And I hope I'm able to be around for, you know, another several decades to keep on the journey, man, because... Yeah. You know, the more I'm on the journey and the more fun I'm having, just the more I realize there's so much I don't know. It makes me want to get up every day and be a better person and be better informed. And if I can help other people do that around me, then I just think that that's a bonus. I mean, that's kind of icing on top, you know?
Exactly.
So it's good to be with people of some like mind in that regard, because I think it's nice to remind each other that we are all in this together.
Amen. Yep.
Exactly, brother.
Well, Mickey, I know our website is projectcensored.org.
Yeah.
And it looked like you have an event coming. Just real quick before we close out, you want to tell us a little bit about what your fundraising for something looks like?
Oh, well, we're always fundraising as a nonprofit, but there's several events coming up. One that may interest your viewers and listeners and your supporters and friends. Next Tuesday, 9 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock Pacific. This is on the projectcensored.org website too. We are actually showing our new documentary film that you alluded to earlier. It's called United States of Distraction, Fighting the Fake News Invasion. You can see it on our website and it's free on YouTube. We put it online for free, right? So people can actually watch it and access it, because so many of the events got canceled with the lockdowns. But we're showing it on the Real News Network. It's therealnews.com out of Baltimore. They're a really interesting news organization, and we're going to show the film, 64 minutes. And then Abby Martin, Eleanor Goldfield, myself, and Nolan Higdon are going to do a Q&A panel conversation. And so even if people maybe watch the movie another time or whatever, coming around 7:10 Pacific time, I think, yeah, 7:10 Pacific time or 10:10 Eastern is when we'll actually start that conversation. So if your folks, listeners and viewers are interested in seeing it, that'd be next Tuesday, October 13th, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, the Real News Network.
Excellent. All right. Thank you so much, Mickey, for coming on. Real pleasure. Hope to talk with you again soon.
Yeah, thank absolutely, you, Justin Neal. Thanks so much for having me, and love to continue conversations with you anytime on or off. Offline, right? Mm-hmm. In the real world. So thanks so much.
Thank you. Appreciate everything you do, bro.
You too. Thanks, guys.
Take care. Mickey Hupp from projectcensored.org. Yeah, really awesome speaker. I you know, he's a treasure trove of information. Definitely check out his work. Yeah, what'd you think, Neil? Boy, he was just like...
Oh, yeah, nonstop download for sure. I agree with all that. And it's just like, it's a real thing right now. And we know the solutions exist, but it's just the energy that needs to take to get to those solutions are pretty extreme, because it is, you know, these ones, the lawmakers basically against the rest of the world that's being censored. And then there's also devices, like the devices that we rely on now are the ones that have invaded our privacy and are allowing for us to be censored. But because we rely on them so fully, we can't be a citizen of specific societies without utilizing the technology we have to censor us, you know? So it's so paradoxical. Basically, we live in a catch-22. So it's kind of like disheartening But at the same time, we know that it could be solved, but it just, there kind of needs to be some sort of political revolution, right? Which is what's going on right now, in order to stop that from happening.
Yeah, precisely. I mean, that's one of the things that we were hinting at throughout the discussion is that, you know, and our listeners will know this well, if we're living in a truly spiritual reality, if we all have the potential for enlightenment, ascension, sovereignty, godhood, we might say, apotheosis, then that means it's a game everybody has to play. If we really want to have paradise on earth, if we really want to live in a golden age, then it's not just me and you and screw everybody else. We need everybody on board, because ultimately we're sharing the same world with everyone, you know?
Straight up, man. And we have more in common, whether you're left, right, or whatever in between. We still have more in common with each other just because we live in the same world, same society. We shop at the same stores, you know what I mean? Then many of those that say that they have our best interests in mind, but really haven't even been involved in our world ever or since they made it big, right? So right. We just need to really affirm to ourselves, I feel, that we are one and the same. And that's why we do what we do, right? We're trying to really bring people together so that we can move forward together rather than split. But with that being said, I am just noticing the division so hardcore right now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I wanted to just do a kind of like a summary of what, you know, I experienced, kind of also my closing segment, and include some information that just came out in here. But I want to go ahead. Did you have anything else that you want to kind of share first? And then on our closing statements, I can maybe say that.
I'm going to just get into an event that I'm going to tease towards the end. Go ahead. You go for it.
All right. So I took some notes here just to convey this, because the censorship thing is a real thing. It annoyed me quite a bit. I am pretty shocked still. And it's just that, you know, in this world, like, if freedom, as you said, like, people need to deal with the consequences of freedom. And one of the consequences is there is going to be fake news in a world of freedom. Right, with 7 billion plus people, there's going to be a lot of disinformation out there. But then what we have right now, we have fact checkers that are also agenda oriented and that aren't using rational information and not even doing research to see if these things are true or not. So not only do we have a world where freedom of speech is now creating fake news, but we also have the ones that are saying that they're checking the fake news, not really being the people that we need to have in place for this. And due to this, it's creating a backlash on fake news. It's almost like it was set up from the beginning. So now the freedom of speech is being under attack, because they can say, the media, social media giants, tech giants can say, like, oh my God, look at all these people saying all this fake stuff. We're fact checking them and look how off the truth they are. But then the missing link right there is the fact checker. The fact checkers aren't really doing the due diligence in order to figure it out and just do a little bit of research into Snopes and who owns Snopes and how they came about, really to explore that whole concept. But we can't really like be in this world where as soon as someone doesn't have your similar beliefs, you're automatically down to censor them and pull them off platform and deplatform them and not give them a voice. But then if someone comes with your belief, you want to push them up there. That goes against everything that the US was supposedly for, right?
Right.
So in order to like really get over this whole divide and conquer thing, because I'm thinking that this divide and conquer thing is so deep that it's almost like all these tech giants were in on it from the beginning, because they've used algorithms, tech giants, Facebook, Twitter, Google, you know, and more, algorithms and agenda-oriented platforms. Those are the two things. They have algorithms that make you go down the rabbit hole of what you're into, whether it's hardcore conspiracies or not, so that you don't see other things. You don't have more of a full holistic perspective. And then they are agenda oriented. They have an agenda in the beginning of what they want you to see. So by having these two things there, you're not able to have a platform that really cultivates and nurtures freedom of speech. So we know what all the problems are, but why aren't they being fixed? And this is going to go into the NBC thing I wanted to tell you about. So just yesterday, actually this morning, this is when the article broke. So NBC did a town hall in Miami. I don't know if you know about this, with Biden, right? Mm-hmm. It was a few days ago. And then Politico came out, a mainstream platform, came out with an analysis of them. And all the people, so it was a bunch of undecided voters asking Biden, right? Right now, it's really hard for me to believe that there's a lot of undecided people in general right now, because of how divided things are. But So there were a whole bunch of undecided voters. And guess what? Every single person in there was also on NBC's platform asking Trump questions when Trump was in doing the town hall meeting, but they weren't undecided voters then. There were Republicans voting for Biden. The same exact people.
Yep, yep.
So they had anti-Trumpers in both of them, and they classified them as completely different people. And then the mainstream outlets actually saw this, because you can't deny it. It's not like, oh, this guy's a crisis actor. No, no, he was in these two things. It was literally like, look at these pictures and these guys talking and the same thing. But yeah, they're
I saw different that. Stuff.
So this is how deep it goes. They haven't apologized. They're not even confronting. They don't need to confront it because it's just going to go away. They know how the news cycle works. It's just going to phase away. So what are they, this show? We already know about Project Mockingbird, that we have like Defense Department individuals getting full-time salary from three-letter agencies and also getting full-time salary from the news anchors, but they have the agenda of the three-letter agencies that they're pushing in there. But then we also have these actors that are literally pretending to be like, I bet you anything that these guys just go on the circuit of these town halls and are just a part of whatever the platform tells them they gotta be, you know? It's just so mind-boggling. It's so deeply ingrained in a society that our news is complete entertainment now. Don't look at news for truth. Do not. Look at it to maybe have an occasional laugh, you know? So that's pretty much my whole thing in regards to censorship, my closing statement right there. But what are the solutions? The solutions really are, we need to figure out how to regulate these tech agencies in some way that benefits us. And we need rational, logical, independent, actual fact checkers. Because I'm not opposed to fact checking, because there's a lot of bullshit out there, right?
Right. Yep.
But we need to actually have a neutral fact checker. If that existed, most of the stuff that is hearsay and people saying opinions won't even be fact checked. It would be like things that are based on science, things that are based on actual occurrences that occurred. This person said, I said this, but he actually said this. You know what I mean?
Right.
But instead, they're getting all theoretical with their information and for example, Snopes had this thing about Antarctica not having pyramids. How the hell do you know that? Did you go down to Antarctica and look at the places that we can't even fly over and find out?
Right, yep, Yeah. Crazy. No, they have no idea. I mean, you're right. I like to think about it, and you put it really well. If we want to have a society where news is actually informing people, then it's good, but it's very similar to a game. How do you know that the person you're playing ping pong with is playing fair? It's because you know the rules, and then you're paying attention enough to be able to assess their behavior to know if they're playing the game fairly. And that's why they don't teach us critical thinking. They don't teach us epistemology. They don't teach us philosophy anymore. You know, when you're asking people about what major you should major in, and they say philosophy, what do you normally hear? Oh, you're wasting your 4 years. Or you want to be a waiter when you leave college. You know, what these kind of things. But philosophy is the ability to really grapple with information and know what you're dealing with. And our reality is based on information. And people in this or listen to our show know this. That's what consciousness is all about. So, you know, if we want to have a society where it's actually enlightened, then everybody has to do their part. Everybody has to play the game, because the bottom line is you're playing whether you like it or not. And this is why I think, you know, one of the psyops that the cabal pushes is the idea that you can be apolitical. There's no such thing as being apolitical. If you're apolitical, it just means that you've chosen to sit on the sidelines and you're letting somebody else pilot the ship. And now they're the one who are deciding where you're going because you're still on the boat. You know what I mean? And so, yeah, I think the good news is, like we said in the show, you know, to leave it on a high note here, is that we're in an awakening right now. Mm-hmm. People are realizing a lot of this stuff is happening. There's a lot of censorship happening. There's this alternative media. I mean, that's what we're doing. We're putting our voices out there to try to give clarity to this. And so, you know, the world that exists in 20 years, if we all do our part in whatever way we can, even if it's just supporting the people that we think have a good positive voice and a good message and maybe have their honesty at heart, then we might end up in a world where the media is a sacred institution. I mean, in my estimation, if there's a game that you can play, like if you were addicted and you were the king of the world, what would you do? You know what I do is I make media like it's like a pillar of society. You know, nobody can mess with it. It should be protected like the EPA. You know, we have this Environmental Protection Agency. We need a consciousness protection agency. you know, that protects our ability to think clearly and things like this. So anyway, this is a fiery show, man, because we could keep talking all night long, but we got to close it at some point.
I love this show. I'm so glad it went this direction to have a conversation about this. And I'm hoping that more people will have these conversations too soon, because, you know, I don't see too many shows completely dedicated towards it, but it's a real thing. And once, if you're not censored, you don't trip about it. You know what I mean? So it's like, there's very few people against censorship hardcore. People theoretically are, but you don't really actually enact your sovereignty upon that concept until it happens to you. Right. So it's like, so to get people on board, especially if they're against the ideology that got censored.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
That's where we get in a stalemate. And we're talking about it right now. And even though I want to go hardcore into solutions right now, we can only really talk theoretically, because I don't even see the stepping stone towards that yet. But there could be a huge shift very soon, because there is a line. Once you cross that line, it becomes complete totalitarianism, right? Authoritarianism. Right, when it gets to that point where you're completely controlling society, and then the masses are just like, wait a second, okay, now we're all pissed off, right? Then you can't do it anymore, unless you decide to completely do a regime change and just say, hey, you guys, we own you now, right? Mm-hmm. As long as we have these checks and balances and the ability to sue the government and things like that, and the more people you have behind those concepts, the more likely we are to have change. So right now we have a good system design that I feel it might get worse before it gets better, but it's definitely going to get better, because they're trying to see how far they can take us. And I think it's taking us over the top at this point.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. But yeah, I agree. I don't know what the ultimate solutions are. I have a few ideas, but I think what's happening now is, because a lot of people are experiencing censorship, is that it starts with caring. We have to care enough to want to do something about it. And so I think we're on that road now. So,
yep.
Okay. So we'll go ahead and close out. Everybody, thanks so much for participating and joining in the conversation. Really great show. I'm going to, just a quick reminder. If you are a fan of Silence in the Storm, go ahead and go to Silence in the Storm. Look for the subscribe star link. It's on the right-hand side. Please contribute what you can. It'll help us stay afloat. We're going to be doing that from now on. Definitely get with Neil as far as his work, portaltoascension.org. And a little teaser, we're going to be producing an event called protectthevote.live, or I'm going to be producing it. And that's going to be a meditation event, a 4-hour event that's going to be on the first, all about what we can do as consciousness beings to try to not be partisan, not divide ourselves from a place of unity and caring, actually use our consciousness and our abilities to try to protect the world that we're in, given all the craziness that's happening this year. So keep your eye out for that. So, all right, Neil, any last words?
Just be love, share love, and just focus on the unity. We're all in this together. Actually, I don't like to say that anymore, because the COVID people hijacked that term. We're all in this together. It's like, it's become cliche, because all these people that don't believe we're in it together are telling me we're in it together. You know, but let me say it in a different way. You know, dude, we're all humans on this planet. Like, it's time to unite, and the world is freaking falling apart in front of us. And really, just hug your brother and sister, check your ego to the side, check your ideology to the side, and literally put your hand across the people you don't know, research what they're into so you can understand them better, and love. You know, that's what we're really here for. Everybody wants to be loved. Everybody wants love in their life. That is the common thread that connects us. Why don't we focus on that rather than everything that divides us? So I love you all. This is Neil with Portal to Ascension. Thank you all so much for joining us today.
Yep. Amen to that. And I'll close out with the same thing. We're all in this together. Much love, everybody. Check you out at SolaceInTheStorm.com, and I'll see you next time.
Take care, everybody.